Welcome to Your Life Reset, a Virta Health podcast series. I'm your host, Teresa Link, and in this series, we'll hear from people on their Virta journey, the wins, failures, moments of adversity, and moments of joy they're experiencing along the way. So sit back, relax, and listen as we unwrap the truly human experience of Virta. Hey there, listeners. It's Teresa Link, registered dietitian and content creator here at Virta. Welcome to another episode of Your Life Reset. Now, on January 15th, a new study was published in the journal Neurology. And the title of this study was Long-Term Intake of Red Meat in Association with Dementia Risk and Overall Cognitive Function in U.S. Adults. That's kind of a mouthful. Really, what the public saw were scary headlines like high intake of red meat causes dementia. And notably, this caused a lot of us to really raise an eyebrow and express some concerns, because for those of us following a low-carb lifestyle, red meats like pork and beef can be a pretty integral part of what we're eating on a regular basis. To help us make sense of this study, we've got Dr. Eric Sodikoff, senior clinician at Virta, here to help us. All right, well, great to have you here. Dr. Sodikoff, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me, Teresa.
You bet. So I wanted to start here, before we kind of dive into all of this, you know, red meat and dementia stuff, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about you? So what type of medicine were you practicing before you joined Virta? And then what made you want to become a doctor here?
Yeah, so I was PCP slash hospitalist. Going back and forth, doing hospital rounds and seeing office patients for many years, like 20 years before coming to Virta. And what I was taking care of in the hospital was mostly people with end-stage disease, especially in the hospital, where you have people with, you know, really advanced complications of diabetes, advanced complications of weight. Once I got doing more the PCP stuff, I found out that, hey, that I didn't really know much about nutrition and diet. And when people would ask me what do I do to lose weight? I was, it was a little bit at a loss and I didn't know what to do. So I kind of went on a mission to kind of, really educate myself about that. And so eventually I ended up getting extra, went in for extra certification in weight loss and obesity, just simply because I was just trying to satisfy my own curiosity about that.
And then it turned into something much bigger, it seems.
Yeah. Eventually, I got to the point where I was like, hey, when I was doing this in the office, I was like, telling people to eat low carb, and people were like coming back, 6 months later, and they were, their diabetes was better, their dyslipidemia was better, they lost 50, 60 pounds. And it was kind of crazy. And I was like, why isn't everybody doing this? And, I heard about this, Virta and Dr. Hallberg, and that they were just doing amazing things, getting this and should try to bring it to the masses. I was like, where do I sign up?
I'm so glad that you did, so that you can come do things like podcasts and hang out with me. Okay, so the reason that we are here, I actually brought you on kind of last minute because there was this new study released, and hey, let's try to get ahead of this. This could be something that kind of freaks out a lot of people. So again, the title of this study is Long-Term Intake of Red Meat in Relation to Dementia Risk and Cognitive Function in U.S. adults, but I am going to share my screen and show some of these headlines kind of in the wild. The first one right here from Neurology doesn't seem quite as scary as, red meat consumption increases risk of dementia and cognitive decline.
Yeah, that's the original article.
Okay.
That's the original article, the academic article that was published.
Would definitely raise eyebrows, I'm sure, and I'm sure it has already. So, red meat again is there's so many different types of red meat. So, I don't think this is necessarily something that we haven't heard many other times. Issues with, or kind of some scare tactics around red meat or headlines around red meat, but seeing, you know, increases risk of dementia is kind of scary.
Especially when it's coming from, like, you know, the Mass General Hospital, it's like the most prestigious hospital in the world. That headline is coming from them. Some of the studies, like the ones that says eating processed meat could make you, raise your risk of dementia. Well, that's, reports half of what the study said. The CNN headline, keep your red meat to these limits to protect your brain health, experts say, which is kind of, that's kind of frightening. So,
yeah. And it just goes to show how easily you can get confused as well. Exactly, it says high consumption of red meat, keep your red meat to these limits. And then we've got the Healthline article that's saying processed red meat. And really, we're not just talking about all red meat, are we?
No, we're not. So,
okay. Yeah. So again, some scary headlines around red meat and dementia, right? First, kind of walk us through this study and the study findings and really what they found about this link between the two.
Yeah, so this study is very interesting. And when I first saw the headline, I could actually pretty much guess where it came from, because you'll see this a lot. You'll see a lot of studies which shows that eating chocolate eating chocolate lowers your risk of cancer, or red wine does this. And almost all of these studies actually come from this very prestigious or very influential place called the T.H. Chan School of Public Health at Harvard. And so when I saw this, just the headline, I was like, oh, I wonder if that's another one of those studies from there. And then when I looked at it, I said, yeah, you can just look at the authors. And the authors are actually quite famous, influential authors, Dr. Willett, Dr. Meyer Steinbeck, very influential and leaders of this organization. And a lot of their studies actually come out of a lot of the data that they get come from actually these very long-term studies which have been done on, like, nurses and health professionals that have been, these studies have been going on for decades. I think since the mid-1970s, they've been following, thousands of nurses and thousands of other health professionals, including, doctors and veterinarians, and how their health has progressed over the years. And so most of this is what they do is every couple of years, they'll send out the people who are enrolled in the study, they'll send out this extensive questionnaire and ask them all sorts of questions about what their health is like. And so that is basically where all this data comes from. So just to kind of give you a general sense of the type of study. So the study is actually what they call a prospective cohort study, which is basically meaning that the people signed up for the study and then they look at these people as they age and as they progress and what happens to them over the course of their health over the course of their lifetime.
Oh, so they weren't asking these people, hey, what did you do 20 years ago? Or what did you eat last week? It was monitoring them forward.
Well, literally what they do is they'll send out what they call a food frequency questionnaire. And they have other questions, but one of them is a food frequency questionnaire. So they would ask something, questions like, what did you eat in... How many times did you eat hot dogs over the last week? And then they would say, 5 years ago, how many times were you eating hot dogs? Or 20 years ago, how many times were you eating hot dogs? Or, how many ounces of bacon did you eat? Kind of questions. And so the type of questions when I'm faced with questions like that, I'm like, I sit there and I go, I don't know. And you just kind of really get, you're really guessing. And so the quality of the data that you're getting is not really, is not very accurate, you know, at all. And so that's the problem with food frequency questionnaires is people's dietary recall, even for what they ate yesterday, is pretty poor. And you and I know, kind of can know that from taking care of people at Virto, where we know that, you know, sometimes people just don't recall things that they've eaten. And so, you know, so we're starting off with kind of a low level of data.
Yeah, I actually just recently had Allison Zoller on talking about the ultra processed foods and all those headlines that came out, I believe, last month, and were freaking a lot of people out. And a central part of that too was challenges that you get from using a food frequency questionnaire, but also how difficult it is to have a controlled environment in a dietary study. So you have to use, you know, what you have, but recognizing there are limitations. And so all of these other, you know, she was talking about how difficult it is to remember what you ate yesterday for breakfast, let alone, you know, why you went into the room that you're in. Why did I come in here?
Right.
I swear I came in here for some reason.
Yeah.
And then 20 years ago, you know, it's, but you have to use something and there is value to it. It's just,
Yeah.
What I'm hearing is it's not perfect.
Yeah. So it's not the same thing as like maybe they had a webcam strapped to your head and they watch all the food that you put in your mouth.
That would be invasive.
But it doesn't start off like that. But anyway, we could talk about what the study, well, let me talk a little bit more about the methods of the study. So they did this where they had people, and the people who were reported, they broke people up into different groups depending on how they answered questions regarding, you know, two things. Well, one, it would be plain red meat, which would be just the, you know, like pork and beef, and how many servings of that ate per day, you know, how many times they ate per week. And then they broke it into groups where people who were eating, you know, one serving a day versus people who were reporting less than a quarter serving a day. And so that
would
be.
Did they get guidelines on how big a serving would be?
Not that I saw.
Do you know?
I didn't. Okay. I don't think I saw.
Yeah. Well, one serving for me might be very different than a serving for.
I just, anytime I get any sort of like, you know, hot dog eating event, I don't know. But that's what they did. And so they actually did two different things. They would take these two groups and then they looked at whether or not they actually were diagnosed with dementia. So if like their DOP, their PCP kind of, you know, recently diagnosed them with dementia, they would record that. But they went beyond that. They also did what they call cognitive studies, where you could actually, you know, do this questionnaire where it kind of tests your recall and your reasoning abilities. We do this in the office where we can actually test people's mental status in the office. And so they actually did telephone interviews with people. So the people who are in the kind of the low, you know, meat eating group and the high group, that's they differentiated between those two groups. And they also differentiated between if you're reporting, you know, processed meat and non-processed meat. And so, and there's a difference, but there's a slight difference in quality between those types of foods. And they did find some differences.
So we had the group that was low in meat in general, or low in red meat specifically.
Yeah. So they broke it out. So they reported four columns. The one column was low processed meat. The other one was high processed meat. The other group was low amounts of plain red meat, and then high consumers of plain red meat. And so what they ended up finding.
Okay, that's helpful.
Yeah. So, and what they ended up reporting was that that the people who the people who are eating the low amounts of processed meat, you know, they didn't have a risk. They report this as what they call relative risk. So you have a risk of 1.0 is average risk. That's like 1.0. And then if it's higher than that, that would mean it's more than average risk. For example, if you were a smoker, for example, your risk of lung cancer would be something like 30 to 100 times greater than somebody who never smoked before. So that's a clear thing. What they found with this study, at least with processed meat, was that there was a 13% increase. So it was a 1.13 relative risk compared to your average risk with the processed meat. And then actually they didn't find, for red meat itself, they found no difference whatsoever. So,
okay.
So if you were just eating, steak and ham or what, or some sort of red meat, actually they didn't find any sort of difference whatsoever.
Gotcha. So my pork tenderloin, my pork chops, pork roasts, beef roasts, steaks, things like that, those seem to be neutral, no relative risk in terms of increase for dementia. It's the processed ones that seem to be the problem.
It's exactly. And some of those headlines actually got it right. They did say the processed meat got mm-hmm. it right. But some of the other headlines, actually, they said just plain red meat. And that's not what the study said.
Right. And that's how it gets so confusing.
Yeah.
So the issue appears then to be primarily the processed red meats. Okay. So, but definitely a 13% higher risk according to this study that is not entirely perfect, as we know.
Yeah, and it gets less perfect the deeper that you look into it too.
Okay. Based on kind of what you've learned, what the study showed us, and just your general knowledge, as a physician, what might be some of the concerns around processed meats that perhaps could be playing a role in a greater risk of dementia?
Well, I guess the concern with processed red meats is actually not the meats themselves, actually. It's actually because processed meats, what they take, you take some meat and then you put it into a grinder and then you put additives to it. So these mm-hmm. additives actually could be things just like, flour, wheat flour, rice flour, tapioca starch, high fructose corn syrup. You could put spices and other flavorants and all sorts of things, colorants. So all those things go in there. And so really the difference between like a processed meat, and there's different types of processed meat. Some processed meat just don't have any of that stuff. It's just like you put it into a grinder, maybe you mix pork and beef together. Or you put in a little bit of liver or a little of other stuff. And so you can't even really lump all processed food together as a single entity. Some have very trivial amounts of things like, something like bacon, I think it's cured with a tiny bit of sugar, but it's so small that it's like less than a gram. It's not even, it's kind of a trivial amount even for Verta. Like all beef hot dogs, well, they're all beef. There's nothing in it, which is would be considered an adulterant. But that's it. But when I look at this, the point that I wanted to get across to, Verta members, and anybody who's watching this podcast is that this study, there were some really serious confounders in this study, which makes you wonder whether or not you should pay attention to this at all, if there's any real risk, if the risk is actually coming from the processed versus the unprocessed meat, if that's coming at all, or if it's something else that is associated with eating these things. Because remember,
You know, we've been all told that like eating bologna is just like the worst thing you could do for you. And so perhaps there's a difference in the people who are kind of willing to risk their health by eating bologna and lots of hot dogs might be kind of, risk takers or kind of just kind of less health conscious in general. And that's the difference. And when you look at some of the tables in this study, you actually do find that there are, you know, there's a difference in these populations that goes on beyond that. They're not the only difference between the red meat consumption, but the people who are eating red meat were different in other ways.
Gotcha. So those would be the confounders.
Those would be the confounders. So let's say, so for example, the biggest ones that I saw was, I think there was a, so people who are, you know, big eaters of the processed meats or the one serving a day, at least, they were actually also smoking twice. It was like twice the rate of smoking. And they also exercised less by about a third.
Okay. And so it's possible to conclude, not cause and effect, of course, but people who have a tendency to eat more of these highly processed red meats perhaps are also engaging in some other not so healthy behaviors. And maybe it's that combination and not just the processed red meat itself is kind of what I'm gathering, which makes it tough.
Yeah, you could have just as easily written the study up and say smoking is associated with a 1.13 risk of dementia or lack of exercise. In fact, you know, there have been studies like that where they mm-hmm. point that out. But this one is focused on red meat, and so. But you could actually easily have written the headline for these any number of different ways.
Right. Yeah. Once again, it makes it difficult to really parcel out when it comes to nutrition studies. There's always things that make it difficult. And again, something that we were talking about with Allison Zoller on the ultra processed foods discussion was you can put people in a controlled environment and let's say like a metabolic ward and 100% control what they're eating. But at the same time, you're not doing that for the rest of their lives. You're doing it for maybe a few weeks or a month. So there are limitations in both. And we just kind of have to accept some of those limitations and try to make the best choices that we can, it sounds like.
Yeah, the point of these studies actually should be, and I should point this out, is that these types of what we call observational studies are good starting points for research. It's a good place where you want, you know, what we call it hypothesis generating. It's something like, oh, I observed something that's interesting here. I should look into that further because when you look at a study like this, you could say, because it can't really establish cause and effect. We noticed that somebody had some behavior, and we do see that these people, have dementia at some period of time, but it doesn't say if it's associated, which direction the arrow points. So you can't really do that. In order to do that, you need to do what we call a randomized control study, where everything is exactly the same, and the only difference that you're changing is one variable. So for this study, if you want to look further into this, you'd be wanting to do studies where you're looking at kind of, adding more red meat consumption here. But there have been studies which actually have, in the past, there was like this one major study called the Minnesota Coronary Study, where they actually compared like low-fat food eating or low cholesterol eating versus eating kind of a higher cholesterol types of foods. And actually it came out that the study investigators really thought that the low cholesterol intake group was going to really win the day. And it didn't turn out the way. And they ended up burying that study for years. It's very interesting.
Yes. Because it didn't have the answer they were searching for.
Yeah.
Right. Didn't have the conclusion that they wanted. So let's bury it. We don't want people to see that.
And this study is actually very interesting. At the very end of the study, even though that they did not find any difference in red meat consumption versus non red meat consumption. At the very end of the study and in the discussion section, it didn't stop them from actually proposing several different mechanisms for why red meat was bad, even though they didn't find actually a red meat problem. Most they actually found the only difference was is whatever, you know, the non-meat stuff that they mix in is the bad mm-hmm. stuff. But they went in and they said, well, maybe it was this chemical called TMAO, or they said that red meat increases insulin resistance, and maybe that was the cause. Well, you and I both know that you know we've got lots of people eating lots of red meat, and we see people's insulin resistance plummet every day.
Mm-hmm.
We know that's not true. So it's very interesting that even though it was essentially a negative study, they went in and they made all sorts of speculations anyway.
Okay, so what we've talked about so far is plain red meat does not seem to be the issue. Processed red meats, possibly, but more likely to be all of the fillers and all the additives. And even then, we don't entirely know. So I think there's a lot of us that follow a low carbohydrate lifestyle, probably a lot of our listeners, people watching this that are following a low carbohydrate lifestyle, hopefully many of our members. And most have heard that there are some serious benefits when the brain uses ketones for fuel. Can you go more into that kind of the flip side, the benefits of this?
So the other thing about the study is that it's actually the opposite of what you would expect. Because usually people who are eating more of this stuff, you know, number one is like kind of red meat actually is almost one of the kind of a very good food for human brains because they have the proper amounts of, you know, fats, the essential fats that we need. It's cholesterol. The brain is like made of 20% cholesterol. The weight of the brain, of the non-water weight of the brain is cholesterol. And it has all, you know, has choline, which is necessary for brain function as well. It's just actually pretty wonderful. So this is actually kind of the opposite effect. Now, and that should be noted that people in that study, you know, these were not, you know, people on the ketogenic diet. They were just people mm-hmm. who would just be, you know, eating that as part of their regular diet. So they'd be eating if they were eating their steak, they'd be having their baked potato with it. So these were just, okay. you know, normal people. So, you know, so you can't really extend that to the ketogenic diet, but the ketogenic diet itself is expected to actually inhibit dementia, if anything. And the reason is that, you know, the brain actually uses glucose, a lot of glucose under normal circumstances. And if you're not eating a ketogenic diet and you don't have many ketones around, well, that's usually not a problem because your body is going to be metabolizing glucose.
Okay.
But what we found is that as people develop, dementia is actually the glucose consumption goes down. Their brains actually become resistant to getting glucose into the brain cells, which is quite scary. It's like insulin resistance to the brain. And you know, some people call it, you know, type 3 diabetes. But the interesting thing is like, oh my God, there's this source of fuel, ketones, which actually can cross right into the brain and doesn't need insulin to be introduced into the brain. It just can go right in there and it actually increases metabolic rate of the brain. So it just seems it's rather wonderful that way. In addition to this, you know, the anti-inflammatory effects of ketones that we've just demonstrated in our own studies, and Dr. Stephen Finney talks about at length. And inflammation is, you know, pretty much detrimental all over your body, including your brain, and your brain is part of your body. It's not detached. It's right in there.
That's good. Well, for most of us.
For most of us, yeah. But it is actually, So so not only does the study not, you know, it didn't make sense, it's just kind of the opposite of what you would expect.
Gotcha. The you brought up insulin resistance of the brain, or mm-hmm. some folks throwing around type 3 diabetes when we're talking right. about dementia, or possibly Alzheimer's. We've talked before about this and have discussed at length Dr. Georgia Ead and also Chris Palmer, and how they're really jazzed about this, doing a lot of research in this area, specifically around psychiatric illness. So that seemed something that was pretty exciting, and it's the brain, and it's all related. So what do you kind of think about that?
Yeah, well, number one, you just mentioned, you know, two of my favorite people, Chris Palmer and Georgia Ead. They're both psychiatrists, and they both practice what they call this new term called metabolic psychiatry. And so they're using all sorts of, and so they get people and they're putting them on low carbohydrate diets and fueling their brains on ketones, and they're finding a lot of very interesting things. And I think even at Virta, we did a study about, you know, mental health and about less depressive symptoms in our patients.
Yeah, we reported on symptoms of depression and mood in general, I believe.
Yeah, mood in general. And so I would highly recommend their books. Like Dr. Ead's book is what, Change Your Diet, Change Your Health, I think is the name of her book. And
we'll have to look it up and put it in the comments.
Yeah, those are awesome. Yeah. Those are awesome books. I would highly recommend it.
A lot of really great information. I'm really glad you were able to hop on kind of last minute and help me out to kind of untangle this for those folks, especially our members who might be thinking, well, I just started this new lifestyle, or I've been living this lifestyle for a while. Things have been great. I've lost weight. I've been able to lower my meds. And now, oh my gosh, I'm going to get dementia because I eat steak and pork and, maybe some salami, and bacon is almost everyone's favorite food at Virta. So for you to just answer that question, do our members need to worry about this, in your opinion?
Clearly the answer is no. There is nothing to worry about from red meat. And again, even the other processed meats, which I don't recommend eating, especially for if you're a Virta patient. Virta patients have problems with, glucose, and the additives in there would not be good for your diabetes. So but for the general population, even that, the studies that they're reporting on really are so minimal and are so questionable that I would actually just kind of ignore them.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sotokoff, for joining us this afternoon. It was wonderful to get to talk with you, and thanks for helping us better understand this study and what we can kind of make of it. So I'm excited to have you back. I'm already volunteering you for a future study and to come and talk to us about what that might mean and whether or not we need to be concerned, how we can make the best choices possible. So I hope to see you back very soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, Teresa.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. And if you'd like to regain control of your metabolic health and feel like yourself again, check us out at virta.com. That's VIRTA.com. Your Life Reset is for informational purposes only and shouldn't be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Contact your provider if you suspect you have a medical problem. I'll chat with you all again soon. Until then, stay inspired, my friends.